That was in the Army. Not the Marines. Don't confuse the two. You can only do something for so long before it becomes a part of who you are. So I don't have a problem going to war because that's who I am. It's part of what I do.
It is like an automatic brotherhood. A hero 1 minute and now you're back to like the, you know, the garbage man. The whole thing is so surreal.
Officially, I'm a tank operator, but when I went over there, I had a specialized job position where I did PSD work, which is basically it's a bodyguard for high-ranking officers and diplomats and anybody that they think is important. So our job was to basically take them around the city and watch their back if we were traveling through the cities. And every once in a while, they would task us out to do the performers, because they'd have performers come for the soldiers. And our job was to protect the performers from the other soldiers.
I was in the Marines. I was a sergeant, and it's called our fire control team. It's like a four-man team.
Before I was sent over there, my biggest fear was having to, or accidentally hurting innocent people. That was my biggest fear going over there. And it was a very short-lived fear, because after about, I don't know, 3 months over there, I didn't care, because any one of them can be an insurgent at any point. They can be not an insurgent 1 second, and then the very next second, they'll just decide to shoot you.
Well, I was there with my brother, my twin brother. He was in a different unit. My feelings were that we were doing something good, you know, that we were protecting our country. Fears were, you know, friends getting hurt, my brother getting hurt. It's just a lot of anxiety about what it's going to be like and, you know, how I'm going to react. More the unknown, I guess.
The reason I went over there, and this is my logic behind all of it, is there are some genuine bad people there. Like, people you see in the movies, the bad guys, you know, you think, oh, it's just the movies. No. There are really people over there that are sick and twisted and are hell-bent on killing anybody that's not Muslim, and they prefer to pick on Americans. They hate a lot of these people hate Americans. Some of them like us, some of them don't. But my thought behind it is, if me being over there keeps one guy too busy dealing with me to plan on blowing something up here, like my sister's school or your work, then it makes it worth it. I have no problem laying it down to protect people. I have no problem with that.
Do you regret joining the Marines?
No, actually it was the best decision I made in my life. You know, it was more about like our buddies and our friends and making sure that everyone was okay, as opposed to like, you know, trying to kill someone, like an enemy guy or, just trying to take care of ourselves so we can make it home. That's like was the drive, you know, that was like our driving force, just more protecting ourselves than it is to hurt, you know, to be a combatant. I don't regret it.
I think the hardest part about being overseas is giving up your family life. Because it's not just laying your life on the line, it's your social life that just, it gets destroyed for that long of a period. I believe that they deploy us for too long of a period at a time. A year is standard for the Army. The other services go for less time. It's hard because a lot of guys have never met their kids. Their children are born while they're gone. I knew one guy that was there. He got extended twice, so he spent 2 solid years there. And his wife left him. His kids hate him. His finances were jacked up. It was a nightmare for this poor guy. So that's the hardest part about being overseas. The hardest part about being in Iraq is the weather. It's so hot. Oh, God, is it hot.
How hot?
Oh, I think the hottest we saw was like 135.
Oh, my
But then
God.
You gotta think, you're inside in an armored vehicle with no air conditioner, and you're wearing 90 pounds of body armor, and in some cases, you're running around dodging bullets.
Toughest part. You know, it was hard. It's funny how a big deal was like mail and just like hearing from home, because it would take, you know, you send a package or something from here or a letter and it takes 3 weeks to get there. And I think I was one of the last guys to like receive my first piece of mail, and like I was good for a while. I'm like, oh, you know, that's okay, something will be coming, whatever. And like it just took forever for my first piece of mail to get there, and that was tough.
Do you feel like the returning soldiers are kind of their own culture just because...
Oh, absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. Because I can meet a guy that that was overseas, even if he was in a different area and never worked with them and never met him before and his job was totally different, I could sit down and have a 4-hour conversation with that guy and totally understand everything that he's talking about. And other people in the room will just look at us like we are nuts, like we're speaking a different language. And we get it. You know, I understand everything that he's talking about. I've met people... I saw one guy when I came home at the airport, actually, that I knew in basic training, like, years and years and years prior. I hadn't talked to the guy in, like, 5 years. And I sat down, and we hung out, had a beer, and talked like we've been best friends forever. And, you know, other people just look at us like we're nuts. Like, and we, in Army language, there's so many acronyms and this and that and slang terms that people don't understand. So it's a like, total different language. And I think that irritates some of the people that I hang out with at home because they're like, well, how come he gets along with that guy? He doesn't even know it. And that's just how it is because you can relate when, you know, when something blows up in your face, and I mean that in the most literal sense. It's an experience that you cannot convey to anybody. So when we talk about, you know, I'll talk to friends of mine from overseas about, oh yeah, you remember when that Haji blew up the IED right next to the Humvee and the 1911s were going off and blah, blah, blah. And people are like, what are they talking about? But I'll understand them perfectly. And it's just, it's a bond that is unspoken that even if you don't like the guy, you still understand them.
Do you think that anybody here could even begin?
No. Begin to understand?
Yeah.
No. There's no way. I mean, Hollywood is getting pretty good at conveying the story and experiences. I'll give them that. But unless you're there, you really don't get it. You don't understand the, you know, instant adrenaline rush of what's going on around you and, you know, what happens to your senses and... You know, some guys go through a big emotional thing about it. You can't convey that to a person that hasn't been there. I mean, you can depict it in a movie, but it's just not the same as actually being there.
Yeah. It's like an automatic brotherhood type thing. Like, hey, yeah.
I couldn't imagine just being shot at. Just dodging bullets.
You know what? There was a couple of times, because we did convoys most of the time, and the Iraqis have this thing where it's like hit and run. They'll shoot a couple rounds and they'll run away because they know if they stand and fight, they're gonna die. So there have been a couple of times where we were driving back and, you know, we get close to the base, and so we'd relax a little bit thinking we're home, and all of a sudden we hear drrrrah in the distance, and you hear this real, real faint whizzing sound, like real close to your ear. And if you hear that sound, that means that bullet is within 3 feet of your head. And it's just, ooh, is it an adrenaline rush? There's no roller coaster that can give you that. I wake up sweating every once in a while. So I don't really remember what I dreamt about, but... There was a guy, I didn't know him personally, but I worked with his unit often. And they were getting ready to go home. They were leaving before we were... And he waited, his wife, it was like 2 weeks before they were going to come home, and his wife sent him a Dear John letter, basically left him, while he was, you know, two weeks before he was going to come home. And he waited until his unit's very last mission, so he made sure all of his boys came home in one piece, and when they parked their vehicle, he put his shotgun in his mouth and pulled the trigger. 2 weeks before he was going home. You know what? I blame his death on his wife. She's I won't say that word. Never mind.
Those mental type illnesses are so hard to pinpoint and so hard to solve. And, you know, by the time they're able to diagnose it, it's almost like it's too late. I remember getting off the exit to go back home, and I was just, like, looking at some, like, 18-year-old girls, like, just driving in their cars, like, having a good time, and I'm like, it's the thing that so many people take for granted. I mean, you go from doing something that you feel is, like, so meaningful to going back to, like, your normal, everyday job. And for me, that was, like, working for an ambulance, shipping people from con homes to hospitals. And it sucked. And a lot of people got depressed. And it's a very, like, tough thing to, like, swallow. You know, feeling like you're on top, you know, like, a hero 1 minute, and now you're back to, like, the, you know, the garbage man.
Did you feel like there was a big adjustment, or did you jump right back into just normal life?
I think coming home is harder for the reserve soldiers than it is for the regular active duty guys.
What's the difference?
Well, the reserve soldiers, which is Army Reserve and National Guard, they have normal lives. They are plumbers and teachers, and they're normal people. And then all of a sudden they're a soldier for a year, and then they come back. I think they have a harder time adjusting than the active duty guys. Because active duty Army is a whole nother culture into itself. So when I came home, I had my regular active duty friends around me all the time, and we could talk about stuff and hang out. It was a good buffer to getting out of the military, which I did about 3 months later. I didn't have any fears about, like, a professional adjustment, or I wasn't afraid I was going to come home and go crazy and kill people. I didn't think that was going to happen. I was mostly afraid of dealing with social issues with specific people when I came home. That was really hard, actually.
What was, like, frustrating about coming home and seeing, like, your friends and your you know?
The frustrating part at first was that people just don't get it. You can tell all the stories in the world, and you can be as descriptive as possible, and they just don't get it. And that was somewhat irritating, but I got over it because I understand that they don't understand. Another story is, you know, when a roadside bomb goes off next to your convoy the first time, it's nerve-wracking. The aftermath of it is nerve-wracking because you're checking all your friends to see if they're hurt or if anybody's bleeding, and you feel the concussion blast, but your adrenaline's pumping so hard that you aren't sure if you're hit or not. So you're checking your own face for blood. You know you're fine, but you're checking to see if you're bleeding. You ask your friends, am I bleeding? Am I okay? And it's just this insane, like, 5 minutes afterwards where you're just checking and rechecking and making sure everything, and it's frantic. But, 6 months later, you get blown up, and the first thing that goes through your mind is, damn it, now I gotta change the tires. You know, and it's stupid.
That's the change from beginning to end.
Oh, yeah. But, once you get used to getting blown up, I know that sounds like a very strange thing to say, but once you get used to it, you kind of have fun with it as long as nobody gets hurt. There were several times where we would get blown up, and normal people would be going to the doctor and going to a shrink and talking about their near-death experience, and here we are 10 minutes later having lunch, talking about whatever we were talking about. And I remember taking a step back in my mind and thinking, wow, we're all kind of crazy. And I brought up the point that that normal people would be going to a shrink right now. And my friend looked at me and said, your head's so big you would need 2 shrinks. and we would just talk all kinds of crap, because every explosion is different. Because I'll give the Iraqis this one, is that they are creative with their bombs. We got blown up by a donkey one time.
What?
Not by the saddlebags on the donkey. A barebacked, no saddlebags, no saddle donkey that had a mortar set up as a bomb shoved in its backside. So this donkey comes out in the middle of the street, and we kind of stop because there's a donkey in the street. It's not something you see every day. And the donkey looks at us, and it gives this horrible cry, and then poof, we had donkey all over the trucks. And we made so many jokes about that. It's kind of sadistic a little bit, but it's making jokes and sick humor is kind of how you deal with it being so hard. And I didn't figure that out until I got back, and I was like, oh, okay, I guess that's where all the sick humor came from.
If there's, like, one thing that you would want the American public to understand about returning soldiers, could there be, like, one thing?
Oh, there's a couple things.
Okay, go on.
One, if you meet a combat veteran, like, in a class or on the street, it is not okay to ask them, did you shoot anybody? Because it's like, you know, no, I went over there to do tiddlywinks. What do you think? And that's not an okay question to ask. Don't ask that. Also, remember that soldiers, when they go out and do their thing, the government pays us nothing. We get paid squat. And so try and understand that we don't get paid very much. That's a big thing. Matter of fact, if your class could start a petition to pay the soldiers more, go for it.
was, like, learning the language and communicating with other Iraqis difficult?
You know, they get you, like, those little books to learn the little catchphrases, and the people were great. They freaking loved us. It was, I mean, the towns that we were, like, living in became, like, our little hometowns, and, you know, everyone was waving, and...
You know, if a doctor decides to stop working at a hospital and works at Subway, is he still a doctor? Yeah, he's still a doctor. So I still very much consider myself a soldier, even in normal life. America.